Our final speaker today is Darlene Bautista. Darlene Bautista is a PhD student in history at the University of Toronto. Her current research explores transnational affect and intergenerational care through the oral narratives of Filipina garment recruits of the 1960s and 1970s. A proud North End Winnipegger, Darlene graduated from St. John's High before completing her BA honors in history at the University of Winnipeg. In 2021, she received the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council Canada Graduate Scholarship Doctoral. Darlene's presentation is titled Pag Kapa Kapa as Oral History, Reading Silence and Refusal in the Sewing Roots Kasasayan Project in Winnipeg. Darlene.
Good day, everyone. Magandang araw po. Thank you, Director Lougheed, for inviting me and my family here to celebrate with you all on this important milestone. 10 years is an incredible accomplishment for both the University of Winnipeg and the Oral History Center. I want to wish a heartfelt congratulations to everyone who has labored through the years to reach this great achievement. Mabuhay kayo. I remember all those years ago when this was all but a dream to you, Professor Riley and Professor Freund. It was then that we, at our nonprofit, ANAC, embarked on our first oral history project with the Filipino-Canadian community here in Winnipeg. As I prepared for my talk today, I thought a lot about how my understanding of oral history has since evolved. I remember the many oral history interviews that have since taken place, the telling anecdotes, the off-the-record tales, the formal recordings, and the many extended dinners we were invited to stay and partake in. I think now how oral history has shaped my worldview. I've learned that oral history was never about filling gaps in information as I once believed. You see, this history has always and will always continue to be there. Oral history, rather, is about building knowledge by building relationships that not only interrogates the past, but collapses time itself. Often I'm asked in the classroom and in the community, but Darlene, how do you know if what they're saying is accurate? I answer simply, you don't. Because oral history takes this memory, a memory that you are fortunate to be entrusted with, in all its nuances, from the mundane to the extraordinary, and examines its afterlife to this person and their relationship with this past. As our lives in the present changes, so does our relationship with our past, with our memory, that truly history never stays the same. So to truly practice oral history, especially in the Filipino-Canadian community and beyond in the Philippine diaspora, it means shifting your space and place with time to be both an insider and outsider, or in Tagalog, labas loob, to be worthy to hold these temporal relations, to respect and carry them as this knowledge is told to you from those willing to share a moment in their lifetime. So today I argue that oral history is literally to learn, and to search in what Filipino social psychologists or Sukulihian Filipino call the indigenous practice of pagkapakapa. The Sewing Roots Kasaysayan Project began in 2017, when my mom and I set off to gather the oral histories of her friends and former colleagues from the garment industry. Mom had arrived in Winnipeg in 1974, a garment worker recruit under the Manitoba Fashion Institute initiative to help modernize and expand local clothing production for export. She was one among a dozen cohorts, a few hundred recruits in all, that arrived in the city from the Philippines between 1968 and the mid-1980s. I wish to acknowledge that the lands she has since come to call home, the lands on which I was later born, belong to the Anishinaabeg, Cree, Ojibwe, Dakota, Dene, and Oji Cree nations. She and other recruits from her hometown of Amono settled into a home on Bannerman Avenue in the city's north end. She first came to know Canada from the vantage point of that neighborhood, just steps from the Red River, where the Métis Nation was historically displaced. On her daily commute to work downtown, the Main Street bus that she rode paralleled the rail lines that first connected Canada from east to west. I want to underline that it had not been for the 1871 agreement between the seven First Nations and the Crown, under the first of the numbered treaties, the Pacific would appear differently to us today, to us as Canadians. Yet as my mom crossed that very ocean, I am sure that she was unaware of this history. For all she knew, Canada needed her and others like her to work towards its progress. The conversations my mom and I had before each interview sound pretty typical to most families in the diaspora. She spoke to me in her language, Tagalog, and I replied to her in my borrowed language of English. She was fluent in the language and the culture from that region of Luzon, and I was privy to the bits and pieces that stuck to my thinking. I'm not sure how much of our conversations were lost in translation, but this is how my siblings and I grew up. This is how we navigated much of our life, between two worlds, two cultures, and two languages. As a family, we were familiar with each space, but as individuals, we lived within them with varying degrees of comfort and ability. So when my mom prompted me on the next interview on how she became acquainted with this particular tita, or auntie of mine, I knew the coming conversation was rich. For all my fancy education and training, it was mom's real life experience that could communicate to our community in the way that I regret I never could. Mom's first foray into structured oral history, and I felt myself return to my childhood and the soundscapes of her migrant world. Huntahan in Tagalog is a kind of unregulated speech that audibly signifies a closeness between people with an extension of vernacular vocabulary. In the Philippines, it is heard throughout the neighborhood among passers-by on the road, exchanges in the market, or lazy days outside the sari-sari variety store. This was mom's language on the factory floor, the apartments, and the downtown bay cafeteria where she met with friends. It was this language I heard when mom picked up the phone to reconnect. Mom's friends have since become family, as ninangs and ninongs, godmothers and godfathers, to us kids under Catholic rites, and the compadrazgo system. We were raised within a network of trust and an extension of fictive kin that emanated with filial care. Mom's lived cultural knowledge is far more complex than any outsider can theorize. There's just nothing linear about the Filipino conversation in research. They take place as casual as they sound. To search, search, and to ask, ask, and Tagalog is built from relationships, founded on linkages of reciprocal trust, of a shared commonality. The core value of each Filipino is this affect of knowing called kapwa. For this, I reflect on the degrees of trust mom has garnered in her lifetime. As a Filipina garment recruit, she arrived in Winnipeg to a reception of both relief and disdain. In the editorials and debates documented by the Winnipeg Free Press, they represented, concurrently, the gendered labor needed to modernize the garment industry and the racialized bodies that compromised the fight for better wages and working conditions. To reference scholar Roland Tolentino, transnational figures, in this case, the Filipino worker, are sublimated with the Philippines' third world or neocolonial status. Yet the Philippines of the 1960s and 1970s, under President Ferdinand Marcos Sr.'s Bagong Lipunan, or New Society, was supposed to mark a time of development and change. This distorted sense of nationalism, with the onset of martial law in 1972, equated to increased poverty, hardship, and repression for the peasantry and working class. Crony capitalism upheld by American aid, World Bank loans and IMF structural adjustments meant little to the women who shared their life stories with us. Their memories tell that peasant and rural folk shifted onto life in the big cities. Historic Manila and Cebu burgeoned with new opportunities for work, education, and training, Some women left the local cottage industries, including the clothing and textile hub of Taytay, to work in international factories like Red Sun and Royal Garments in Manila. Young, single women in their 20s, educated both formally and informally, were earning more in these factories than they ever did as local seamstresses, rural teachers, and urban secretaries. They also did more than so. They headed production and design. They managed the offices and organized the payroll. They did the physical labor of cutting and bundling the cumbersome weight of differing textiles. Their history is honed in on the relationship to these memories of what was their everyday. The starts, stops, and silences of our project then were almost always punctuated with a regretful sorry or a pained pasensya na. Pasensya na was a response from one call, a refusal from Mom's kumare to take part. She refused to recall the pain of her own mother's passing prior to her recruitment and migration. She refused to recall the new family her father created and the pain of her dispossession that urged her to work towards new beginnings abroad. This hurt was for her to bear, not for her to display. While others agreed to share their life histories, the list of questions I prepared became moot. The linear discussion shifted to resemble the casualness of pagkapakapa, the awkward pauses, nervous giggles, side glances, and pointed stares became its own coded response. It became a lesson in pakiramdam, which according to Rogelia Pipua, is a kind of relational sensitivity that is guided by cultural instinct. Can you tell me a bit about your childhood, I asked, breaking the silence when one of my ninas answered with a song. Sorry, Darlana, I cannot remember my father. He died when I was so young. These affective tears seemed to flow almost consistently with those I shared a closeness or a kapwa with. I felt my own anxiety rise as I set aside my questions again. I set aside my questions again this time to let Mom pause between her own tears. She recalled how her father, my atang, lost access to the lands he worked on as a tenant farmer. The hacienda would be sold, and soon after, the family's coffer of rice would go empty, plunging the family into unprecedented hardship. Refusal for Eve Tuck and Wayne Yang is a generative no that opens discussion to new analytical perspectives. Audra Simpson will further attest that refusal is a political act. What was said and not said in these moments during our interviews is ripe with meaning as it contests the very narrative of progress that homogenizes their life and labor. To become culturally aware of their kapwa and to recognize the trauma and their refusal through the instinct of pakiramdam may shed light on the ways they chose to navigate their shifting worlds as young women, daughters, and wage earners. Mom and I say our thanks, and after several hours of meeting and dining on the merienda prepared for us, it's time to go home. Sorry, pasensya na, nag-abala pa kayo, we say, apologizing that we've taken up so much of their energy and time. It's a short walk to my little red car. Once inside, we talk a little about how the conversation went. We joke about forgetting to turn on the recorder. Then we ponder about what we should bring down for dinner. But the heavy parts of our discussion are left behind. The weight of these moments is set aside again to give us this moment to pause and reflect. I carry them now, and so does Mom. I know them the years that have passed, pandemic and all. These recordings are all that is left of my titas and ninangs who are now gone. I understand through our shared kapwa, I have felt through our trust in pakiramdam. We have entered a new relationship for another to search, and to learn in what is pagkapakapa. Thank you.